You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Same-sex marriage is legal in Canada. In BC, same-sex partners enjoy the same legal status as straight couples. There's a higher degree of acceptance of same-sex relationships than at any time in living memory. Yet kids in high school who identify or are identified as queer can still expect constant bullying. Taunts, verbal harassment, and outright violence are everyday occurrences for queer youth. A new book by Rebecca Haskell and Brian Birch explores the experiences of recent high school graduates and asks what needs to change to make schools more inclusive. The book is titled Get That Freak, and it's published by Fernwood. Brian Birch is a professor of criminology and an associate member of the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies at Simon Fraser University, and he joins me on the line this morning from his home in North Vancouver. Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Why did you decide to look at the experiences of queer youth in high school?
Okay, so just to back up a bit, Rebecca Haskell, who's the first author, was the person who identified this. She came to Simon Fraser, and I've worked with all kinds of students, all kinds of interests, and I've actually incorporated a lot of gay-positive work in my teaching for years. But she's the first one who came forward and wanted to do something on this topic, so it was really her interest. And then I got sparked by it as well. So we continued to work after she finished her master's. And I'm a huge fan of Fernwood Publishing, and we decided to publish with them.
Was it hard to find kids to come forward and talk about their lives?
Well, Becky reported to me there were some problems. Actually, the way the research was originally conceived was to do focus groups, which worked sometimes, but other times only one person would show up, for example, which isn't much of a focus group. So we then switched to doing interviews, so we'd actually give those people their due. But it was difficult, I think, and she did work very hard, to canvas people and to try and get people to come forward. What I would say, though, is that since the book came out, you know, about 6 or 7 weeks ago, there's so much more work is coming out now in terms of violence against kids in school and what's being done about it.
Now, Brian, in the book you use the term, and I'll put it in quotes here, gentle violence. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's actually taken from Pierre Bourdieu's work, and this is part of the more theoretical section of the book, and where we're talking about the ways in which symbolic violence, in other words, how people are not represented at schools, but it isn't an out-and-out attack. It's not like, say, a gay bashing, so-called. It's something where your experiences, your history, are just not represented in curriculum or talked about much, and these terms like invisibilization that are used, for example, where people just are rendered invisible in their own environment and that sort of thing. So the idea of a gentle violence, it's violence all the same, but it's something that's very subtle and often not even recognized even by the people who themselves are the objects of that kind of violence. And one thing certainly Becky found out in the interviews is a lot of the people being interviewed did not talk about, again, out-and-out bullying to the point where people were being hospitalized or worse, but shunning, for example, sense of social exclusion, and that can be quite deep. And, of course, that's exaggerated furthermore by sort of social networking where people can quickly target people.
So where do, actions of exclusion like verbal harassment and gossip kind of or name-calling kind of fall into that spectrum?
Well, they would fall right into that that idea about a kind of a violence. But I think the gentle violence, as I understand it anyways, is more just not being talked about, not having any representation, whereas the more I think about it, some of these targets, some of these attacks and denigrations of people can be extremely hurtful. And this is, again, what many of the people that Becky talked to were saying. Even if they felt physically safe at times, they would often feel very much like they didn't belong to that very environment.
What do the teens you spoke with say about how their teachers responded to bullying?
Well, that's very interesting, because certainly some of them talked about a teacher who would stand up and, for example, they would make it really clear that you couldn't get away with offhand comments like, that's so gay, for example, simply not permissible in their classroom. And they'd make it really clear to students that this was a place where everyone should feel safe. On the other hand, you'd get teachers who would be extremely offhand about it and just try and laugh it off or really not take people on when that kind of taunting or baiting was going on. And I think in a way, a lot of this will come down, of course, to school administration, to classroom teachers and that, but a lot of it also just comes down to a kind of ethos where people actually feel that they belong. We had a book launch on November 25th at Little Sisters, and we had a really good turnout and really good help from Little Sisters. And one thing that certainly came forward from the people we were talking to is, like a lot of the youth workers in that we're just talking about, the importance of teachers and others standing up, and also this kind of ethos where people belong. Now, and in the wake of that, I know Extra West had a very recent letter to the editor where the person was saying it's much more than homophobic or transphobic bullying. It's just the whole history we've had in the world, you know, of some people are worthy and other people are not, and they can often be targeted.
It's interesting. Sometimes when I'm interacting with teenagers, there's almost like a kind of normalization of the idea of that you could say, oh, you're so gay, or he's so gay, or she has a lesbo haircut, or that sort of thing. What kind of impact do those kind of, you know, just sort of normalized kind of slants have on somebody who's actually trying to, you know, maybe coming to terms with or trying to discover their own sexuality, which falls outside of that sort of mainstream heterosexual straight identification?
Well, it can be very damaging. I think it can be extremely damaging. And I know with certain issues of transgendered people, not that like EGAL Canada, you know, Equality for Gays and Lesbians Everywhere, in their study, they were saying that transgendered students reported feeling, you know, even less safe at school than their, say, lesbian and gay and bi counterparts in that. So it can be really damaging depending on who's being targeted. One thing that Becky and I worked on from very early on in the study, though, was to not make this something where it's all negative and it's all social problems. That's certainly a large part of it, but we also wanted to look at resistance. And that was something that came up very quickly, was that sometimes people could be put down, but they'd respond. They'd respond, they're fast on their feet, or they would get a gay straight alliance, sometimes working on their behalf, or a sympathetic teacher, but they would stand up and be counted.
What are the consequences of this kind of school environment for queer youth? What impact does it have on them?
Well, certainly there are some queer youth, as we well know now, you know, who simply take their lives. We know from the recent publicity in the States, for example, some experiences we've had in Canada, you know, the people who are suicidal can become suicidal. Dropouts, not uncommon. For transgendered youth, they even have a higher rate of homelessness, for example. So there's all kinds of issues that can happen there in terms of getting through school. And even for people who do survive it, you know, who are following that idea about, you know, it gets better and they'll follow it through and they'll graduate, they might still look back at their high school experience and say, it's a living hell. I mean, it was a living hell, but I got through it for a few years. And I think my point of view is that we shouldn't have to just ask youth to persist through an oppressive environment and that sort of thing. So many of them wanted to actually work very hard at making their school environment safe for themselves and also for people who followed them.
I wonder if you could say a little bit more about the difference in the level of harassment that trans youth face. What do we see there?
Okay, now, and in our study, we didn't have a lot of experience with trans people who were actually being interviewed in that. So that's something that, in terms of the actual study itself, there wasn't a whole lot. But there has been a lot of work. I'm currently, as I'm talking to you, I'm looking at my computer screen, looking at a blog called Playing It Safe. There's real discussion there about the recent study by EGAL Canada. So they're talking about how transgender students report higher levels of verbal harassment and also physical harassment and just feeling unsafe at school. Other manifestations are depression, for example. I did mention school dropout. Sometimes people take alternative schooling, like homeschooling and that, because they just can't go back into the environment. So there is now recognition, first of all, even terms like transgender or gender variance that are coming into the vocabulary. And again, there is now quite a growing community, including an online community, of education and support, resistance.
Brian, why hasn't the greater level of acceptance that queer adults experience in Canada translated into greater acceptance in the high school environment?
Well, my own view on this is it is kind of the elephant in the room, that people know it goes on, that they know that, like you said, calling somebody a lesbo or a fag or, you know, whatever epithet you want to use goes on all the time. It's a very, very common almost kind of a lazy, stupid, common way of insulting somebody. But we're not going to get away or be as tolerant with other things. So depending, like if your racial identity or your ethnic identity, that's become pretty uncool in most Canadian schools to be actually out and out attacking people. But this is just one easy way of scapegoating and putting people down. And certainly many of the people that Becky talked with talked about how painful that can be, especially if it's sustained and if they feel they're kind of on their own.
What about the idea that kids are really, you know, trying to come to terms with their own sexuality at that point in their life, and also trying to nail down gender roles? Does that have an impact on how they treat people who they might perceive as other?
Well, it may well. I think it may well. And part of it would have to do with just immaturity and perhaps lack of experience. But also, I would probably go a bit further and say it depends on media representations, you know, where you have sometimes not much discussion or not much really subtle discussion about what it's like to be queer in the world. So people might see caricatures on TV of queer people or see none whatsoever. So we're living in an environment where people are increasingly looking to the outside world, looking for themselves to be represented. And I think that's why we're talking about this kind of gentle violence where there's often not much inclusion there.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned was the kind of, on the positive side of it, was the kind of resistance that was coming from youth. And I think, you know, at the time that I went to high school, there certainly wasn't anything remotely like that. So what? Tell us more about what you saw there.
Well, some of it was personal. I mean, they would just stand up, and they would either use humor or they would just stand up for themselves and not take it. And that was one thing that we did notice, is some people talked about their high school experiences as a kind of crucible. That's my word, not theirs, but really a journey where they had to stand up, and they actually came to be more in touch with themselves, their own desires, what's important in their life. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's a rare bird, but not that many people can do that when they're that young and when they're perhaps that something that's vulnerable. So again, like I said, the Gay-Straight Alliance was one option, although not everybody felt that that was the perfect way to go. Supportive parents, supportive teachers, anti-homophobic policies, anti-transphobic policies at the school. So that kind of cluster would sometimes give them more strength. And the one thing I'm thinking about here, because I finished my university degree almost 40 years ago, if that's possible. And when I went to university, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. Now I can go to my university, and out on campus is just, you know, across the way from me, Extra West, as I said, Little Sisters. There's a load of bookstores, community activities that are going on now that are actually supportive of queer youth. And again, when I was certainly hitting my 20s and that many years ago, there was next to nothing. You'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, novels, literature, anything. It was just huge silence about it. And I think it's changed a great deal.
What's needed in schools to really address the problem of homophobic and transphobic harassment?
Well, there's been a number of suggestions on that. Now, one is the idea about just changing the terminology so that people become more familiar with things like gender variance, queerness itself, not a term that you would hear every day, for example. So that's one thing that's very important. The other is actually training teachers so that teachers are aware when homophobia or transphobia is going on and knowing how to deal with it appropriately. I'm sure getting, you know, parents involved as well in this kind of discussion, because they've been very involved in terms of safety for children. This has been a big part, you know, of making schools safe so people can actually go there safely. But again, that's often focused on physical violence. It's not so much on this kind of exclusion and shunning.
Well, it's been really great talking with you this morning, Brian. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lorraine. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Brian Birch. He's a professor of criminology and an associate member of the Department of Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies at Simon Fraser University. He is author, with Rebecca Haskell, of Get That Freak, recently published by Fernwood.